From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Tighter security measures are being introduced in Volgograd and across Russia. The chief of the Federal Security Service, Alexander Bortnikov, told reporters Monday after a pair of terrorist bombings rocked the Russian city, leaving dozens killed and many injured. Bortnikov, saying he was acting on the orders of Russian President Vladimir Putin, said the action includes more than 4,000 officers from the Interior Ministry, as well as personnel from other key departments, both in Volgograd and other regions. Security is being tightened at crowded places, transportation and fuel and energy facilities, in cooperation with local authorities. Bortnikov also said that police reinforcements are being brought in to help patrol the streets in Volgograd. The National Anti-Terrorist Committee, meeting earlier in the day, discussed additional measures to ensure public safety during the holidays. The first attack took place Sunday at the Central Rail Station in Volgograd. That blast killed at least 17 people by the latest count and injured scores of others. We have this report from RT.
Alexander Koblikov arrived at Volgograd railway station within minutes of the explosion. He told us what he saw there.
I approached the scene of the terrorist attack. There were more than 20 people lying on the ground around the train station. Police and rescuers working at the site, ambulances. I think the blast was very powerful because two stories of the building were affected. People who were there when the explosive device went off said that all people standing around were killed. It was just a normal day. It was very common, people entering the station, leaving the station, walking around with children. I think there were over 200 people at the station and around the station, maybe 200 or 300 people. After the bus explosion, people here were quite careful. Considering that it's a holiday season, I think people got relaxed, and unfortunately, this is another terrorist attack coming again.
And now to Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer and researcher in international relations and security studies at Moscow State University. Two terrorist acts in 2 days in Russia's south. How do you expect security to be ramped up there?
Well, certainly security has been in a heightened condition regarding the threat of terrorist attacks for the last year as we approach a countdown to the Sochi Olympic Games. The Federal Services of Russia have already announced that they have stopped quite a large number of terrorist incidents throughout the last year and are constantly reporting on a number of militants they have killed. This obviously it only takes one to get through.
The blast reportedly occurred at the entrance of the station where there's heavy security. Why do you think the terminal was a target there?
The terminal, mass transport, has always been a target of these Islamic terrorist attacks in Russia. We've seen several terrorist attacks on trains previously, as well as on metro stations within Moscow over the last decade plus. I think they calculate this as it is extremely disruptive to the fabric of Russian society. It creates a true atmosphere of terror when any average citizen can be affected who uses public transportation, which is the majority of the population.
If it is proved that it was a female suicide bomber, it will be the second such attack on Volgograd since October. Why is the city in focus?
Well, Volgograd is a principal focus simply because it's an easy and close target to the south of the Caucasus. Yesterday, the Russian security services reported that a principal aide to the self-styled Emir of the Caucasus, Doku Umarov, a principal aide of his, Islam Atiyev, was killed in Dagestan by security forces after a siege of his house. It is suspected that he then blew himself up rather than accept capture. I think we can look at this attack today as far more than likely a very rapid reaction revenge attack for the killing of this aide of Doku Umarov's.
Once again, who's likely to be the driving force of the terror threats there?
The terrorist threats are a loosely based coalition that is often called the Islamic Caliphate, that is centered around Doku Umarov, who has taken over several years ago of the larger Chechen Caucasus terrorist groups. Doku Umarov has taken these groups in a much more strictly Islamic fundamentalist action than ever has been before. They have largely been displaced from Chechnya itself due to security measures there over the last decade. But they still exist in the fringes, in the hills of Dagestan, around, and have support from outside the country. They operate regularly in Turkey, in Saudi Arabia, and they keep getting support, which keeps them going despite their small numbers.
What do you think needs to be done to prevent such attacks in the future?
That's a complicated question, and I don't think any government in the world has quite recognized how to stop terrorism, particularly terrorism inspired by fundamentalist visions of Islam. This is especially more difficult in Russia because it is a homegrown terrorist, albeit one from a very restricted southern area of the country. I think the combination of what has worked best in Chechnya, which is a combination of large amounts of federal aid to restart the economy, restart employment, cooperation with local moderate Sufi Islamic mosques and institutions, along with a firm hand of security such as Ramzan Kadyrov has shown in Chechnya. I think this model needs to be extended as well to Dagestan and Ingushetia, and this is the best chance of combating a problem that has no easy solution.
As well as security forces, does the public play a role in trying to make cities more secure?
If we're talking the general public, such as in Volgograd, where the terrorist incidents happen, no, I don't think that a heightened state of citizen alert can really help matters there. What can help is within the Islamic majority republics of the Russian Federation, such as Dagestan and Ingushetia. If the citizenry can be brought closer to the government, and the best way to do this is with showing concern for them. Education programs, bringing employment, jobs, economy. If you give the citizens of this region where unemployment is rife and anti-government sentiment is high, if you give them a reason to support the state that they are citizens of, that will be the best way for to see a reduction in such incidents of terrorism from within the citizenry themselves.
Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer and researcher in international relations and security studies at Moscow State University. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
The second attack struck on Monday morning, this one on a trolley bus during rush hour. That killed at least 14 passengers. Altogether, 41 survived the blast, with 27 being hospitalized. Authorities said that the death toll may rise. We have this report from RT.
another explosion in the city of Volgograd. Less than 24 hours, it happened on a trolley bus this time as it passed by a market during the Monday morning rush hour. At least 10 people confirmed dead in this blast. This less than 24 hours after another blast happened at the city's main train station there. Margaret Howell is covering the events in Volgograd for us. Margaret, are we any clearer so far about the latest suspected terror attack?
What we do know at 8:30 this morning, and keep in mind, it's just maybe a minute past 10 now, so this happening just a while ago, 8:30, it does appear to be another suicide bomber, this time a trolley bus, and what we know so far, that 10 people have died, and this explosion happened just meters past the bus stop, so right in front of a market during a very busy Monday morning, people still going to work. It is a Monday morning here, despite the holiday season. A medical plane from Moscow is coming to help those who have been injured in the blast this morning.
Investigators believe that the two terrorist attacks are connected. They say both bombs were coated with identical metal fragments, which made the devices more deadly. The Russian Foreign Ministry said that the criminal attacks in Volgograd, as well as the attacks of terrorists in the U.S., Syria, Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, Nigeria, and elsewhere, have much in common. Here in the U.S., National Security Council spokesperson Caitlin Hayden issued a statement which called for closer security cooperation with Russia ahead of the Sochi Winter Olympics. The U.N. Security Council condemned Sunday's attack. Don Bob reports.
The members of the UN Security Council have condemned in the strongest terms the terrorist attack that occurred at the central station of Volgograd, the Russian Federation, on December 29th, causing numerous deaths and injuries. In a press statement Sunday, members of the Security Council underlined the need to bring perpetrators, organizers, financiers, and sponsors of this reprehensible act of terrorism to justice and urged all states, in accordance with their obligations under international law and relevant Security Council resolutions, to cooperate actively with all relevant authorities in this regard. The members of the Security Council extend their condolences to the families of the victims and express their sympathy to all those injured in this heinous act and to the people and the government of the Russian Federation. The members of the Security Council reaffirmed that terrorism in all its forms and manifestations constitutes one of the most serious threats to international peace and security, and that any acts of terrorism are criminal and unjustifiable, regardless of their motivation, wherever, whenever, and by whomsoever committed. The members of the Security Council reiterated their determination to combat all forms of terrorism in accordance with their responsibilities under the Charter of the United Nations. Don Bob, United Nations.
Meanwhile, Damascus has asked the UN Security Council to hold Turkey and other countries accountable for their support of terrorists who cross into Syria from Turkey, Jordan, and Israel and supply arms to terrorists. In a letter to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the head of the UN Security Council, released today, Syria's ambassador to the United Nations, Bashar Jafari, said such conduct is a brazen violation of the resolutions of the international guiding bodies, including the resolutions of the UN Security Council. Bahraini officials have said they seized stocks of weapons and defused a car bomb during 2 days of security raids in that Gulf nation. Public Security Chief Tarek Al-Hassan said Monday that police had captured 13 people wanted in connection with security cases on board a boat allegedly smuggling them out of the kingdom. Plastic explosives, detonators, automatic rifles, and ammunition were found in a warehouse and on board a second boat in raids Saturday and Sunday. In the Houra area of the capital Manama, a car bomb was defused, according to officials. Is it a case of man bites dog? Thai police today staged a protest against what they called aggressive anti-government demonstrators. About 500 police officers with family and friends gathered in a public square near the main protest camp in Bangkok. The rally came 4 days after a police officer was shot dead in a battle with demonstrators who were trying to stop candidates from registering for elections this coming February. The police also complained that they were not properly equipped or organized to defend themselves, and that demonstrators have grown increasingly aggressive after weeks of protests against the government. It appears that U.S. forces are now operating openly in Libya. U.S. and Libyan forces reported that they captured Saifullah Benhassin, the alleged leader of the Tunisian Islamist group Ansar al-Sharia in the Libyan city of Misrata. Benassin, also known as Abu Iyad, is a former fighter in Afghanistan. According to U.S. officials, he declared loyalty to al-Qaeda and is accused of inciting an attack on the U.S. embassy in Tunisia a year ago. At least 70 journalists were killed on the job around the world in 2013, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. The figure includes 29 who died covering the war in Syria and 10 who were killed in Iraq, as well as a number of citizen journalists working to document combat zones in their home cities. 6 journalists died in Egypt. According to the Associated Press, Robert Mahoney, the committee's deputy director, said, quote, "The Middle East has become a killing field for journalists," closed quote. On December 16th, immigrants and their supporters carried out civil disobedience actions aimed at shutting down immigration and customs enforcement operations on both coasts of the U.S.
I am here to demand that President Obama end all deportations and family separations. He has the power to grant deferred action for all undocumented immigrants within the U.S., and we are here demanding that he do so. The only ones benefiting from the pain of our communities are the greedy corporations that should not be making money off of our pain and suffering. They are making billions of dollars because of our immigrant communities, paying out dividends. That's sick. It's disgusting. They shouldn't be doing that. And that's why we're here, to demand an end to all of this injustice, to demand that our rights as human beings, first and foremost, are recognized.
President Obama, right now standing as the deporter-in-chief, by deporting so far approximately 2 million people, most of them who are here simply because they want to survive and they want to live better, and that is not a crime. And if that is a crime, then we're guilty of that, and those laws should be repealed. And so we want President Obama to issue deferred action, administrative relief, and protection from deportation immediately. He's got the power to do that. He refuses to do so, hiding behind lies, but we can see through those, and this is why we're here, to do our part, send a strong message to him, and also to the people inside, let them know that we're out here in solidarity, we're fighting with you, and we won't forget you, and we're going to say not one more shut down ICE until everybody's free.
9 protesters from the Washington, D.C. area and 4 from around L.A. were arrested. Blanca Hernandez took part in the Washington, D.C. action. She's lived in the U.S. without documentation since she came here as a child. She spoke by phone from Washington with Liberation Radio's Ernesto Aguilar.
It definitely has a personal note on here, right? I am an immigrant. My parents are immigrants. So if it hadn't been for deferred action, which just came about in 2012, you know, I could potentially be one of those deportation removal cases. And, you know, many people in my family could probably have that, many people in my community in general. So for me, it starts off with that personal sentiment of, like, I'm just like any other individual when I walk on the street. So why is it that an immigration status for anybody should make them any different? So for me, that's what motivates me. I have many friends whose families have been separated. I have friends whose both of their parents have been deported, and now they're here by themselves. You know, I have worked with families who are in the same case, like either mom is in detention or dad is in detention, and a lot of their children, their very young children, are witnessing as their parents are being detained and taken into custody. So we have a lot of psychological impact that is being caused on young children. Everyone at some point has been affected by this, either because it is their family, it is their community, or their friends directly who are being affected by this. So I think anybody who believes and understands that our immigration system is broken and needs fixing, then they would understand that how big of an issue the issue of immigration is.
What are the demands that so many are being involved in civil disobedience to bring to the attention of the Obama administration?
The demands are that the Obama administration stop deportations. They obviously at this point failed to pass anything immigration reform related. So if nothing immigration reform related is going to happen anytime soon, then what needs to happen is a halt to deportations. How is it possible that there are so many conversations about, oh yes, like we want to make sure immigration reform passes, but but it's not perfect right now. Well, fine, it's not perfect. So let's stop concentrating on passing immigration reform and let's start concentrating on making sure that families are together. So let's concentrate on stopping deportations, because the majority of deportations that are happening are not happening to anybody who has a serious criminal conviction. It's happening to people that are driving without a license, who were pulled over for a minor traffic violation. You know, just a few days ago, there was the case of a father of two young U.S. citizen children who the community was trying to advocate for his case for him to have a stay of deportation. And what ended up happening is that immigration officials sneaked them out through the back of a detention center, sneaked them into an airport, and took them away, all because he didn't have a license. Just to see how much money is being spent on deportations, considering it should be spent on other issues much more important, it's disheartening. So our demand is to stop the deportation and to grant deferred action to those people.
How can people be more involved in supporting this critical campaign?
Coming out to the actions is something big, and making sure that whenever you see a petition happen to come around, either through any social media, that you sign it and that you make a call and ask for either the deportation of an individual to be stopped. If there's a review of a detention center, whatever it is that there's a petition happening in terms of immigration, we definitely need the support of the community. And signatures are always good in a petition, but calls are always so much more useful. So we definitely want people to make calls, to contact their congressmen and senators and let them know, look, we know at this point, quite obvious, that immigration reform isn't going to pass. So we want our Congress representatives to tell the president and let him know, like, look, at this point, what needs to be addressed is to stop the deportations. Because at this point, the whole citizenship, should people be awarded citizenship or not at this point? Because at this point, the whole citizenship, should people be awarded citizenship or not at this point? It's no longer important. What's important right now is that deportations are stopped. And we definitely need the community support in this. Basically, just Google it, not one more deportation, and it'll take you to various sites that are fighting deportations, that are specifically fighting the Not One More Deportation campaigns. There's tools and resources that different organizations, it kind of also depends on the state that people, in the state that people live in, that their organizations, their local organizations will have resources such as how to stop someone's deportation. If you know of an attorney that is able to offer their services pro bono and can help with a lot of these cases, that's also very useful. So making sure that you're looking for the tools, but if you have tools to offer, to also be in touch with these organizations and offer your services.
That was Blanca Hernandez from Washington, D.C., speaking with Liberation Radio's Ernesto Aguilar. While humanity seems intent on continuing the daily killings of innocents, whether by state actors in places like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sudan, and Congo, or by so-called terrorists in places like Volgograd and Boston, some folks are apparently looking for a way out. One such person is Dutch entrepreneur Bas Lansdorp, who's looking to the skies for relief. He spoke with Voice of Russia Radio about his project.
I came up with this idea when I was about 20 years old, when I was still in university, and I saw the pictures of the first NASA Mars rover that it took from Mars. When I saw them on TV, I wanted to go to Mars myself. And that's when I started designing my own mission, because I'm a Dutch citizen, not an American citizen, and not a Russian citizen, so I knew that my chances to go with NASA or with Roscosmos were very small. So I thought the only way I can do this is to start my own, to organize my own mission to Mars. Well, this is a long time ago now, and recently we found a feasible way of financing Mars One, and that's when I decided to go for it. So I've been working on this full-time now for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And can you say what are you facing more, criticism or support regarding your ambitious project?
I think anyone that hears about our plan for the first time, they are always very critical of it. But then when I tell them the details, so first of all, it's a mission of permanent settlement, so we can do it with existing technology. When I tell them that we have contracts with Lockheed Martin, with Surrey Satellite Technology, and with Paragon Space Development, and when they see all the advisors from NASA, an astronaut who's one of our ambassadors, a Nobel Prize laureate who's supporting us, then almost all of the time I can get people really enthusiastic for our plan.
Okay, and so the candidates to travel to Mars should not just have a perfect health, but they are also required to have a wide range of skills. So can you name these skills, please?
Well, actually, the most important thing that we're looking for in our applicants is their ability to function in a group. Because the biggest challenge of going to Mars is not the engineering or the medical issues, or the botanical skills that people need to grow their own food. The biggest challenge is for those people to be able to live with just four people together, to depend on each other with their lives, with everything they have, for 3 years before the second crew arrives. And that's going to be the biggest challenge. And then, of course, they need to be healthy and they need to be smart to learn the engineering skills and the medical skills and the botanical skills. But the most important thing we're looking for is team players.
And in that case, can we say that only the best of the best people will be participating in this project?
Well, we have received more than 200,000 applications, and we've selected just over 1,000 of them to go to round number two. So you can imagine that we have a very high selection criterion, but even from those 1,000 people, we expect that we will need to eliminate quite a few of them, because they will prove to be not qualified especially when we put them in isolated conditions here on Earth to test them for their big journey to Mars. The next steps will be further narrowing down those applicants, and at some point putting them in a copy of the Mars Outpost here on Earth, and really test them for the things that they will meet on Mars. So the isolation, the time delay when you communicate with your friends and family at home, growing your own food, dealing with emergency situations, and that's going to be the next steps.
What effect do you think this project will have on science?
Ah, okay. Well, Mars One, the project of Mars One is not about science, it's about exploration. But of course, when humans go to Mars, they are going to be doing a lot of science. First of all, there's the experiment of four people being in a small group for such a long time. That's never been done before. So there's already a lot of psychology research that will be done around that to make sure that we find the right people, but also when they're on Mars to investigate how they deal with that situation. There's going to be big impacts on recycling, because on Mars we need to recycle everything, because every molecule that you send to Mars is quite expensive, and for instance in solar energy. But the most interesting scientific research that you can do on Mars is the history of the solar system can be researched there with more details than here on Earth. because Mars has an older surface than the Earth, and of course the holy grail of scientific research is there life outside the Earth, and this is Mars is one of the places where we could find such life, so that's one of the topics that our astronauts will certainly be interested in.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.